Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to our podcast from CelticUnderground.net. This is the first of two podcasts that will be out this week with discussions between myself and Hullboy. This one is mainly about the football.
Baby, 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 baby.
So you know that last season we had people sending in their new music to podcasts at CelticUnderground.net. We're still looking for that new music. So if you've got any and there's some lined up that people have emailed through to me, it will be getting on the podcast. You'll also note that last week in the Celtic Underground Top 10, we talked about having some cover version songs on this year's podcast as well, being one of the themes for the background music. So if you want to send in whatever cover versions you want, let me know. And we'll see about getting them on. Last week we had Perhaps, 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 the Doris Day cover by Cake. And at the end it was Danny Wilson's cover of Cooks, the David Bowie song. This week it is Come and Feel the Noise by Oasis, Under Me Right Now. And then at the end, for fans of Scott Bradley's Postmodern Jukebox, we have cover of Radiohead's Creep. Anyway, we needed to do a podcast. There was so much to catch up on. The football season competitively had now started. So I called on a Hullboy to discuss the Linfield game and the forthcoming Rosenborg game. But of course, during the summer period, we've had confirmation of Rangers cheating. And then last week, we've had the whatever the rights and wrongs, not very good PR from Celtic's perspective regarding banners and banning. So that chat with Hullboy ended up going into 2 hours of chat. Rather than have a two-hour podcast, I decided to split it up into two. So this particular podcast is a discussion about the Linfield game and the Rosenborg game and a brief chat around the Supreme Court decision and really what we do now. So that is this podcast. If you want to know our thoughts and discussions on the Green Brigade and the banners, that'll be up in the next day or so. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, being accompanied by the Oasis Boys, and handed over to him, Hullboy. So I'm joined now by Hullboy. Nothing really for us to chat about, Andy.
Not a thing, Harry. It's been very, very quiet with all things Celtic. So I suspect this could be just a 5 minute brief podcast.
Exactly. I mean, you wonder the Celtic PR people just must sit around twiddling their thumbs all day.
So we make the news.
Exactly.
And it's not fake.
No, I wish it was.
Well, some of it's fake, but it's not usually to do with Celtic, it's to do with other things in Scottish football.
Yeah, so there's a number of things. We've obviously had the podcast over the summer, they'll be principally focusing on football as the summer ended, a couple of special guests in the top 10 and things like that. But we've now played a round of European football, have another round of European football coming up. Things arose as a matter of those games in European football, which has resulted in Barnley Online. That's all Celtic fans have talked about for the last wee while. So I thought And then there's obviously the Supreme Court with the SPFL. I've talked about that today. So I thought, first of all, we'll talk about the football and the Linfield game. We'll try and wrap them both in the one chat. So what did you think of the games?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, leaving aside the opposition, I think at this stage of the competition now, and given that we're 1 year on with Brendan, there's a tendency to almost kind of look at those two games as being part of the pre-season, because the level of opposition at that in that particular qualifying round is usually going to be so poor that, you know, Celtic obviously have got to win the games, but it's two opportunities to kind of get their match fitness up, really. And I think overall, you know, I mean, 6-0 on aggregate, couldn't really complain about that. But actually, in terms of the number of chances that Celtic created in both games, you could have been looking at double that figure on aggregate. I think Roy Carroll in Linfield's goal, you know, I didn't look to see the statistics, but the number of saves that he made during the game, together with, you know, kind of bodies just being thrown in front of Celtic shots, he easily could have been 12 on aggregate. So I think what we did see was, obviously we saw some changes with the likes of Boyata getting injured. So it was interesting to see some of the changes in both formations and some of the new players coming in, and seeing how they performed. And from what we saw briefly, I was kind of very encouraged. If you take the friendly game in between the Linfield game as well.
So, what were your thoughts on the refereeing performance of the first game of Linfield game?
Well, first game, that referee, absolutely shocking decisions. I mean, particularly the Griffiths one being booked. As lots and lots of people have pointed out subsequently, one of the referees' jobs is to ensure the safety of the players at all times. And it was quite clear in that particular instance, he didn't have any regard for that, and just completely ignored it. Griffiths wasn't time wasting, which is what the referee was claiming. And I think some of his other decisions, particularly in the second half, were just, you just thought, well, what's going on here?
I mean, your point about the referee's job to protect the players, to me, was demonstrated, or his failure in doing that was demonstrated, that not only, I can understand if, to paraphrase what he was actually doing, was saying to Griffiths, look, I know they're ban pots, we all know they're ban pots, can you take the corner kick as quickly as possible and let's just move on, because you're going to win the game anyway. I mean, I know he wouldn't be as blunt as that, but if he'd been trying to get that message across to Griffiths, the first time he spoke to him, I could understand, but in terms of protecting the player, yes, say that, and then next time the ball goes out of play, run over to the side or use his earpieces that he's got to say to his fourth official, I've just had to tell the Celtic player to hurry up and take the corner kick, because he was getting hit, thrown, covered in missiles, and the stewards and the police were doing nothing.
Well, that was the thing that was absent for me, that there was no move by the referee to actually go over to the touchline and have a word with security or the fourth official to sort that problem out. He could see those things coming on the park. Now, I've watched a lot of Spanish football over the years, and particularly in some of the derby games, you do see things being thrown at corners, opposing players. But, that's not a reason for a Spanish referee in a different competition to actually apply that same set of standards. He's there to apply the rules, and he just patently failed to do that. And of course, the annoying thing was that Griffith's yellow card effectively took Celtic into that kind of disciplinary zone with the five yellow cards.
Yeah,
which is just ridiculous, really. I mean, you know, the Linfield players, as the second half got on, you know, we're getting more and more physical. And I think probably you saw in that game some things that the Celtic players were clearly worried about. They don't want to be picking up injuries in mm-hmm. in a first competitive game, you know, when they've got the whole season ahead.
Which is why, again, getting back to the bookings, which is why Armstrong reacted to the way he did in the last minute when somebody could have broken his ankle.
Exactly. And I mean, we know Armstrong, he's not a particularly contentious player. He doesn't kind of go out of his way to antagonise in any way. So he was clearly annoyed at the tackle that he was on the receiving end of.
What I did like about it was that the protector in chief on both instances, maybe because Brown, I think at that point had been booked, but Lustig stepped up to the plate to go to the referee about the Griffiths stuff and to go and to try and sort out the guy after the Armstrong thing. Mm.
I've seen Lustig do that quite a bit in European football over the years, and I think there's almost this notion that Lustig, because he's a seasoned, he's not just a seasoned professional, but he's got good international reputation as well, you know, having played in major competitions. So I think he probably he feels himself that it's his place to actually voice any concerns on behalf of the team and fellow players, which I actually like in him. You know, I think Lustig now, I mean, he's just completely committed to Celtic, and that has been for a long time.
So then we moved to the home game and we played a variant with, you know, bits in between of 3-6-1. I thought it was interesting that the three at the back were Lustig, the right back, Tierney, the left back, and Simonovic, centre half.
Yep.
Almost as if Brendan thought Linfield will offer absolutely nothing, so can almost have virtually one centre half.
Yeah, which proved to be the case, really.
Yeah.
And I think what I saw in that game, really, in what Brendan was doing there, he kind of start to think, well, actually, if he believes that some teams in the SPFL have kind of sussed Celtic out based on last season, he's probably looking for different formations and different attacking approaches, you know, to kind of break up the opposition's kind of preconceived thoughts. So we may see a little bit more of that against some of the Scottish Premiership teams.
I thought it looked to me from the first minute as if Sinclair wanted to score a hat-trick.
Yep.
I would, based on...
Absolutely, and the thing is, some of the images that we saw, you know, were absolutely despicable. Just completely unwarranted, and words fail me, really. I've just no idea what is going through people's minds to kind of produce that kind of imagery and make those kind of racist jibes and what have you. And yeah, I mean, Sinclair's, I think I've said to you before, I don't follow footballers on social media, but I think he's probably fairly active, and he will have seen some of those things, you know, and he would want to kind of respond in a professional way, really, through, you know, rubbing their noses in it.
Yeah. So he certainly played well. What did you make of Incham's debut?
Yeah, I like him. I think there's something about him. He's quite calm and composed. He's obviously physical. You know, there's a physical presence there. So yeah, I was pleased, and you know, I can't help thinking that actually, if it wasn't Brendan Rodgers the manager at the moment, and we'd made the same signings over the summer, I think there might well have been a few more noises of negativity among the support, but I think we've got to that stage where most of the players who've been signed so far, largely the support have just thought, do you know what, we don't really know much about those players, but we trust Brendan.
Yep.
And I kind of fall into that category. So, and I think that was proven both in the friendly and in the home leg against Linfield, that actually the supporters were excited to see the new signings because they don't know much about them, but they also believe that Brendan's brought them to the club for good reason, you know.
So the end of the day, happy with the result and performances?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think looking forward, Rosenberg's going to be a bit trickier. But Rosenberg aren't the team that they used to be.
No, was it 4 years ago they got knocked out by St Johnstone?
Yeah.
And you know, the very fact that if we drew Dundalk straight off, we'd be saying, well, that's nice, but we should comfortably, maybe a 1-0, 2-0 over there, and then 3-0 Celtic Park. That's what most fans would be expecting. Yeah. The fact that Rosenberg, 17 games into their season, only managed to get through extra time, shows that they obviously have a very similar standard.
And Dundalk have been punching above their weight a little bit. But I think I heard somebody saying somewhere, you know, that it might have been Brendan himself, that basically Norwegian football, it's quite well organised across the teams, but they're not very creative as football units.
So, what's your thoughts on that? Are we going to get through?
Yeah, I would think so, yeah.
We don't have enough time to cover the other aspects that need to be covered in this podcast, because we started this podcast and Chris McLaughlin was reporting that Rod Petrie was saying that the SPFL new board, which Peter Lawwell had just stood down from, and again, what was I was led to believe was part of the reason he stood down from it, because it's just a waste of his life, every meeting that he turns up at. There's of no benefit to Celtic. The agenda of the rest of the clubs and the agenda of Celtic are so divergent these days that there's no value to Celtic being on it. Plus, Celtic can see there might be a fight coming up shortly.
Yeah.
And you can't fight it while you've got the collective responsibility obligations of being on a board. And when we started this podcast an hour and a half ago, Rod Petrie had come out and said that they were going to look again at the case for title stripping.
Yeah.
And in the last hour and a half, everywhere's now reporting that they're not going to do anything. That actually they're going to announce on Wednesday that there's no grounds.
Well, is it of any surprise? It's not of any surprise to me that we've not got time to go into it today, but I don't think there's any doubt now that the two Scottish football bodies are inherently corrupt and inherently against true sporting integrity and transparency. I don't think there's any doubt about it at all. And I know while we've been recording this podcast, I've seen some things tweeted by Celtic Research around deals done between Neil Doncaster and Sevco. So I don't think there's any doubt.
Well, I don't... Two things about it. One, you had the Craig White trial, which was such an open and shut case in favour of Craig White being duped by David Murray, Paul Murray, Alistair Johnson and Dave King, that there was no need to call his defence, and they only took about an hour to deliberate, and then they waited for 15 minutes to make sure. If the time that they came through, only because I know someone who'd just been on a jury, and they were given that basically if they'd given the decision 15 minutes earlier, those jurors wouldn't have got their free lunch. So I think they just waited 15 minutes to get their free lunch to make the decision earlier because it was so open and shut.
Yeah.
So you had an open and shut case that said Rangers were going to go bust anyway. They were preparing for the possibility of going bust. It was a concerted corporate strategy to use the tax system to keep the team afloat, to try and get European football, to keep them trading, otherwise they were going to go bust. And that was decided before Craig White came in. And as soon as the Craig White trial finished, the first thing the football authorities did was slaughter Craig White.
Yep.
Within hours of actually the counterposition that Scottish football had taken on Craig White being found, they slaughtered them.
Yep.
Then the Supreme Court comes along and affirms what we all knew, which is, it's the side letters that made the Rangers tax system a tax cheating system. And it's the side letters that also made all of these players illegally registered. And it's the side letters that demonstrate that it was a concerted effort to hide from the football authorities and the tax authorities what Rangers were doing.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And the thing is, from their own perspective now, the Scottish FA, the SPFL as now is, the people that are involved, the two executives, know that they have to keep to that line, because if they don't, the whole thing will unravel. But what they don't realise is that I think there are other ways in which this will unravel. That will lead to their downfall. I think there's a growing groundswell of ordinary supporters who realise that the game's been rigged in some way. Not even necessarily proactively, but there was a team that was actually cheating, and the evidence is all there, and the Scottish Football Authorities have always tried to cover that up, to by definition protect that team and its subsequent new entity, but also themselves as individuals.
If you are in their position and you are not trying to cover up, as you say, but you are what the public statements they're making are what they actually think is the true position, i.e. you think you have a strong and robust legal position to defend, that there's no reason to go into anything further because you've done everything above board and correctly. Why wouldn't you then turn round and say, do you know what? This has tormented Scottish football for 6 years. We've got legal opinion that says we've always been in the right. We know we've always been in the right. So here's what we're going to do to shut you all up. We are going to get this guy in of undisputed high standing and character within Scottish society. He's not connected with any football club. We're going to get him in. We're giving him access all areas to all our files, all the SPFL, all the SFA files. We're going to order the clubs to be fully compliant in any requests that he gives, and we are going to do a full review of every aspect of our game, because that will shut you buggers up, because we know, we've known for 6 years we've been in the right, and this has tormented the game for 6 years. Why wouldn't you do that?
Well, they wouldn't do it because they know that any independent inquiry would state exactly the opposite.
Correct.
Because everything would come out, the five-way agreement, all of the other conversations and agreements that went on, the weakness in the Nimmo Smith inquiry that missed most of the relevant evidence that was required to come to a decision.
Because he was guided a certain way.
Yeah, exactly right. And for Regan and the SFA to issue a statement on the day of the Supreme Court saying, well, do you know what? We preempted this and thought that if this was the outcome, we'd take some senior counsel advice. Well, you and I can go and get senior counsel advice, but usually that advice is going to come down on your side. Because you actually kind of phrase that anywhere, and council is by and large going to protect your corporate interest from a legal standpoint. The only time these things ever get challenged is if it does go through an actual legal process. And we know from what happened through the Supreme Court that actually, you know, and also through the Craig White trial, there are people putting kind of like two sides to these things. And ultimately, there is a decision reached based on the evidence.
Well, getting back to council,
we've never had that with the SFA and the SPFL.
Getting back to council's opinion, the only reason why the Procurator Fiscal would have taken a court case, would have taken the case they took against Craig White, is because senior lawyers within the Procurator Fiscal's office, at least one or more, must have said, we've got a really strong case that we can put this guy down. And they were wrong. Senior counsel can be wrong.
Yeah, but I actually think there's something. I think there's something more sinister going on there.
Oh, absolutely.
I think there was a determined effort by, let's just call them agencies in Scotland, that were determined to see Craig White go to court, and that was because they genuinely believed that he was guilty for destroying a football club, but also there may have been some intent to have that trial to deflect from some of the things that ironically came out in that trial about the involvement of other people who were effectively and already had destroyed Rangers Football Club.
You're talking about the guy with a dreadful memory?
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, the next step of this now is how the supporters can galvanise themselves across Scottish football to really challenge both Regan and Doncaster, and that is done in a public forum. My own view is, and I don't know how this can be done, but my own view was that there should be some kind of like select committee set up in Holyrood, that actually I don't know whether you recall, but last year in Westminster there was a committee set up to review effectively the governance of English football. And there are some recommendations that have come out of that work, which have got implications for football clubs, including supporter representation through directorships. And I think I don't know who's got the cojones to do it, but I think there should be something similar set up in Scotland. And it should include that review of the last 6 years that you've described, because that's the only thing that I can think of as being the nearest to an independent body, you know, that actually scrutinises what went on.
Yeah, and there is a wider, you know, you can if you don't want to sound like you're being petty, for want of a better way of putting it, off picking on this, you can actually say, but this is part of a wider aspect of 25 years of bad governance in Scottish football.
Exactly right.
Where we
exactly
have seen right. The performance of the Scottish national side, yeah, on a very steep downward trend. We've seen the performance of our club sides, with the exception of principally Celtic, if you exclude Rangers, because every game that they played during this century is a 3-0 loss. Then the performance of our club sides has been on a dramatic downward spiral. So everything about the way that the game is run, governed, administered in our country is wrong. And and the Rangers affair was just that in microcosm of decisions were made based on what do we think is the best thing to do in the next 5 minutes. rather than a strategic long-term view of what would be in the best interests of the of having a fit, strong and healthy game in Scotland.
Yeah. I think the other thing for me as well is that, you know, we were talking earlier in this podcast about, you know, kind of the traditional way in which you support your football team at games. And I think, to a certain extent, ironically, I think some of the Scottish football authorities still think that football supporters are largely of that kind of, like, working class, you know, unruly, you know, still would get tanked up with drink on a Saturday afternoon if we allowed alcohol into the stadium, all that kind of stuff. When in actual fact, you know, and they just think that the support largely buttons up the back. Mm-hmm. But if you look at some of the things that supporters have been doing over the last 10, 15 years and more recently, in terms of questioning and challenging some of the decision making within the game, not only in how it affects them, but how the game is more widely governed. You know, you and I and others were probably having conversations every day with folk who could run Scottish football better than the people who are running it currently. And I don't actually say that lightly. You know, I genuinely think that there are so many people that we know who are, you know, who are kind of really kind of bright individuals who actually could make a much better fist of you know, running Scottish football, you know, without any kind of prejudice to one particular club.
Absolutely. And I think that's the other reason why they can't hand this over to other people to look into, because that would then involve we need a wider remit here to look into every aspect, yeah, of the way that this game is being governed and, yeah, mismanaged.
Yeah.
But my concern about specifically the issue at hand is, I understand Celtic's dilemma in this. Celtic will be sitting there thinking, why has it got to be us against them? This is a them against Scottish football thing. That Celtic have no doubt been sitting back this all this time thinking, we want others to be involved in this process. But I know supporters of other clubs who agree with the principle of title stripping. But then when you speak to them, they say, but when I speak to other supporters of whatever club, their attitude is sort of, well, okay, so a team who are dramatically better than us would have just been just a bit more dramatically better than us. They would still have been better than us and still have won all these trophies. Is a large attitude within a lot of the supporters of other clubs.
Right, yeah, interesting. I don't know. I'm just guided by kind of simple things like principles.
Oh, so same here.
And integrity. I guess, you know, many of us are just, we don't like that sense of injustice, and we want to see things being done properly.
Jennifer Ennis-Hill, 10 days ago, got a gold medal from the 2011 World, mm-hmm, Championships.
Yep.
6 years later.
Exactly, and this is where I think Regan and Doncaster are so out of touch in terms of the stance that they've taken recently and in the past, is that there are just so many examples that are coming out across other sports of those wrongs being righted. You know, and everybody cites the Lance Armstrong example, you know, because that was like cheating on an industrial scale, and the cover-up was so, you know, incredible, really, for so many years. So, you know, I kind of put myself in their position and think, well, you know, what would happen if all of this historic stuff came out in the open? What would happen? Well, yeah, there may be titles stripped. What would be the standing of all of the existing membership of those bodies at the moment? Well, in actual fact, they wouldn't be any worse. and they might be slightly better. And the only other thing that I can think of as to why they don't want to do it is whether it's some kind of self-preservation in the roles. But even on that, every time I see Regan and Doncaster, I get the impression that the last place that they actually want to be is in Scottish football.
Well, Regan himself, when he went for the job, was down in Yorkshire, went for the job,
yeah,
said he would move his family up, and has never moved his family up.
Never has.
And leaves at 3 o'clock, 2 or 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So, this is my point, that what do they think that they're doing on a daily basis that gives them some kind of job satisfaction?
I don't know, and to me this gets back to. You could argue that the decision of the Supreme Court to some extent was irrelevant to the concept of whether you should strip Rangers of titles, because the illegal registration of players and use of side contracts is the nub of what Rangers were doing wrong under football rules.
That is exactly the main issue. And it is... I think people get a little bit too kind of complex and sophisticated about these things. But you've hit the nail on the head there. It is simply about that, and every result of every game that involved those players should just be shown as a kind of a 3-0 reversal, as is usually the case. And for God's sake, that club's dead.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist.
And for me, all of this, Scottish football should have grasped the nettle when they died.
Yep.
That all of this angst could have been avoided, you know, because the people saying, oh, you'll just start all up again with them being angry. Well, do you know what? They were in perma-rage scale back then, and the rest and the other 41 fans of the other 41 clubs were in rage against them at the time. That was the time to grasp the nettle, say, do you know what? We cannot have this. Let's look into absolutely everything. None of this preset agendas and Sandy Bryson coming up with strange rulings to give to Lord Nimmo Smith as to what was relevant and what was not relevant.
Yeah.
Open inquiry, grasp the nettle then, deal with it then, strip the titles then, and do you know what? 6 years later, we'd have followed a similar trajectory in terms of the financial health of the new club and everything that had happened since then. But certainly 41 of the 42 clubs, fans of the 41 and 42 clubs, would have long moved on, because it would have been dealt with.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
So what's your expectation of what's going to happen?
Well, I put something on Twitter today. I was replying to the Rangers tax case, and I just think what the Scottish FA and the SPFL will do now is... obviously we need to see what statement says on Wednesday, but I think there might be a lot of kind of those two entities might play each other off, you know, so it's the kind of same argument that Regan was using around UEFA 2011 registration, where he's saying, well, we did what we were supposed to do, not my responsibility, so it's actually UEFA. And obviously, UEFA, from the correspondence being received back, wouldn't agree with that. But nobody does anything about it. So, if you notice, the SFA have always said, well, actually, title stripping isn't our issue. That's for the SPFL. So, the SPFL will probably come back, sidestep the title stripping issue and say, well, actually, do you know what... if this is to do with the registration of players, that wasn't our responsibility. That was the Scottish FA's responsibility. And they'll just play each other off and hope it kind of withers on the vine and people forget about it. I've seen some more cynical things about them possibly doing something like that over a period that annuls the Nimmo Smith work. I've got to say, I'm not conversant enough to know what the time rules are with that particular ruling.
That's what I fear, and the problem we've got, well, not a problem, so Celtic will not be allowed, regardless of what Celtic's attitude is, it's irrelevant to ponder on what Peter Lovell does or doesn't think. The reality is, he's smart enough to know that he can't not do anything about this. He cannot ignore the wrath of the individual shareholders and a large chunk of his... I'm sure there must be a section in the Celtics board, because we're a broad church, there must be a section in the Celtics boards who would, it's in the past now, but I think that'd be a small section, if at all. The vast majority of the fans would want the club to do something. The shareholders have demonstrated at the 2013 AGM that they want the club to do something. So Peter Lawwell knows that Celtic can't do nothing, but I'm quite sure if I was Peter Lawwell, I wouldn't want to start this as a fight of Celtic against the rest, or Celtic against Scottish football, because it's not easy to win that fight.
I'm not so sure about that these days, Harry. I've got to say I'm a little bit undecided, but I think Celtic are in a position of absolute strength. But I think what they need to do is, I think they need to look back at, I know a lot of people were not keen on John Reid, but actually in the period that John Reid was chairman, he came out and he took parts of the Scottish FA on, and obviously they were aided by Paul McBride at the time. And I think Celtic have got to look for a similar kind of approach, where there's somebody with a strong legal position, fairly high profile, who is working with the Celtic board to actually put maximum pressure on both the Scottish FA and the SPFL. The problem there is that Peter Lowell is on the full board of the SFA now. So, having jumped out of the SPFL for, you know, what people might speculate is a future conflict of interest, he still has that conflict of interest with the SFA.
Well, we'll see what's coming, because Celtic's statement. And again, I've read people saying Celtic haven't said anything. Well, actually, within 6 hours of the Supreme Court decision, Celtic were out with a statement that said, we expect the Scottish Football Authority to do something about this. If the Scottish Football Authorities are going to turn around and say, we're not going to do anything about this, then it comes back to Celtic. And they'll have to do something.
Yep.
We'll see. So, finally, before I go, we've got the Rosenborg game. So, what's your prediction for the Rosenborg game?
Well, kind of wish plus a prediction. I mean, we've got to be coming out of that game with, you know, not conceding any goals, and certainly at least a 2-0 cushion. So, another week's gone by. You know, more training, more settling in of the new players. I think we'll probably win comfortably, probably 3-0.
That's what I would like to hear. I think if it had been the other way around, I can envisage us going to Norway and winning 1-0, coming back to Celtic Park and winning 3-4-0.
Yeah.
And so we just need that 3-4 to give us the... You know, you don't want 2-0 and they get an early goal, you know, deflects off somebody's backside.
Yep.
And it's a nervous second leg. You don't want any of that. Well,
no.
Well, with that, Hull boy, I will say thanks very much.
Cheers, Harry.
Cheers. When you were here before, you couldn't look you in the eye.
You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. You flow like
a... So thanks to Andrew Groneberg, I hope that's how you pronounce your name, Stephen Mahon, for the music cover recommendations this week. There'll be more covers along soon, along with new music which you've got lined up and will be coming along. Also, if you've got any cover versions or new music you want to get on, email podcasts@celticunderground.net. You can contact any of us on Twitter at Harry Brady CU, at Hull Boy, at Celtic Rumours, at Lackymore 1, at Stephen4_2, at Marco Cooper. You can also rate us on iTunes, leave a comment on YouTube. I'm going to go now. There'll be another podcast on very, very soon. Just enough time to say that the Celtic FC Foundation Sleep Out campaign has just been launched for November. It raises awareness for homelessness, which is an all-year-round thing, but particularly a problem in the winter time and as we approach Christmas. So if you want to participate in that, you can register now. Also, the money that you raise goes to the Celtic FC Foundation to work on it, so it's not just about raising awareness of homelessness, and any sleeping bags left behind go to the Invisibles charity. So, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, playing out with the Scott Bradley Postmodern Jukebox with the Radiohead cover of Creep. This is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night. Special. Yeah, I wish I was special.